Hello gamers and non-gamers, I welcome you to my podcast. My name is Mana Picker and I'm currently studying game development at the BTS in Luxembourg. Today's podcast is about multiplayer games, especially about co-op games, and I will mainly cover 5 questions today. When did the first co-op games come out? What was the first co-op game about? What is the difference between competitive and cooperative games? Why did those games become so popular? And what is, in my opinion, a really good co-op game? As mentioned, these are the topics I will cover today. If you feel interested, please feel free to stay. So, starting the podcast with the first question, when did the first multiplayer co-op video game came out? As probably many people know, arcades were the first devices on which games could be played on. To give you an example, you might remember Pong, or perhaps Space Invaders. Don't worry if you don't know both. At least you should know Pac-Man. If not, are you even a real gamer? No, just kidding. Maybe I'm just getting old because these games are already old stuff. Anyway, arcades came out around the 1930s, but the video games as we know them today came out in the 1970s. Before the 1970s, there were coin-operated pinball machines, air hockey arcades, or the Crane House Cabinet, where the player is guiding a crane forward and backwards, or up and down. The Crane House Cabinet was half filled with prizes. Mostly the prizes were teddy bears in various forms and colors. The player basically chose what teddy suits him the best, and then tries to grab it with the crane and takes it to the exit. Back to the 1970s, there were a lot of different video game arcades, and most of them were to play solo, like for example Pac-Man. Other arcades gave the players the opportunity to play against each other in a competitive multiplayer. The first one was Pong. Pong is a football tennis game in which each player controls a rectangular bar. With that bar, the player needs to reflect the incoming ball by moving up or down in order to defend his goal. The ball itself gets reflected by the movable bar of the player and the surrounding walls. Only at the 1970s, co-op video games became popular because of a release game called Fire Truck, which people today claim to be the first real co-op game. Fire Truck was a game, as the name suggests, where players had to drive a fire truck. What a coincidence! It is a driving game where the goal is to reach the maximum score by driving through the corridors without crashing. But how did they actually play the game? Well, let's start with the appearance of the arcade machine, in which the game has been played on. Imagine a big rectangle with a screen inside and a steering wheel in front of the screen, attached to the rectangle. Furthermore, in front of that rectangle was a customized chair, matching the rectangle in color and theme, on which one player could sit. On top of that chair was the second steering wheel, which gets used by the second player, who is standing behind the chair. Now, you probably ask yourself, why are there two steering wheels? Well, apparently, the seated player controls the gas, the brakes, and the front steering, while the standing player controls and steers the sway of the back end of the fire truck. As mentioned before, the challenge is not to crash with the fire truck, but as you might notice now, that this can be very difficult, because the corridors are sometimes not wide, or they have probably curves. In this case, players need to communicate and coordinate their move together in order to solve that problem. Imagine there's a right curve in front of you. The player who controls the front of the fire truck turns the steering wheel to the right. Now the second player will have to turn his steering wheel to the left to drive around the corner. If not, the back end of the fire truck will most likely hit the wall. So now, as we know what the potentially first cooperative video game was, let's move on to the next question. What is the difference between competitive and cooperative games? Traditional cooperative games are zero-sum games, which means that only one player wins when another player loses. Cooperative games are structured differently. Players don't compete with each other. Instead, they have a common goal. That means players only win or lose together. The fun in cooperative games comes from the camaraderie and challenge the game provides, and not from being the only player or team left when everyone else is eliminated. No one is eliminated in a cooperative game. Therefore, competition is defined as a social arrangement in which two or more individuals strive towards a goal that can't be attained by everyone. The game FIFA is the perfect example for a competition game, because you only need two players who each controls one team. They play European football against each other, and as we know it from football, only one team, or in this case, player, can be the winner of that match. Another good example for competitive games is Super Smash Bros., in which up to four players fight against each other until one player is left. Of course, the player who is left wins the round. The alternative to competition is cooperation, where individuals work together to achieve a mutually desirable goal. In cooperative arrangements, everybody wins or loses. A good example for a cooperative game is Overcooked 2. As the name suggests, it is about cooking meals for customers, and this in a cooperative way. Have you ever watched Gordon Ramsay screaming at Hell's Kitchen participants that they need to work together as a team? Well, the same principle applies here. Players need to work together in order to complete as many incoming orders as possible in the small time frame they got. The number of finished dishes determines the score with which the players complete the level. That means they can't really lose, they can only accomplish a certain high score and beat it the next time. This mechanic even favors the cooperation in the game, because you can improve by communicating with each other. For example, imagine getting a low score, but you really want to finish every level with a rating of 3 stars. Then you and your friends start talking about the problem and try to figure out a solution for that. They may distribute the different tasks. For example, if they need to make sushi, one player is cooking the rice, the other player is chopping the fish, and the third one combines both with the nori rolls. And if there is a fourth player, he can basically serve the customers. With that, every roll is equally distributed, therefore the process of making sushi rolls is optimized. This example actually perfectly describes the essence of cooperative games. Players start to communicate more and more and try to organize themselves in order to reach their goal. If that is now cooking as many meals as possible or solving a riddle together, the truth is cooperation without communication does not work. That's why cooperation games provide challenges which only can be accomplished by communicating with each other. But why did multiplayer games in general become so popular? If we go back to the times where video game arcades were cool and popular among the generations, at that time most games could only be played per one player, who is beating in most cases the high score who another player accomplished, while other people were watching you play. Now imagine having 10 people standing behind your back who are watching you, playing and trying to maybe even beat their high score. Do you feel the pressure already? I mean, if you are good at this game, probably most of the audience is cheering you on. Others might try to distract you during your play or harass you afterwards. It could also be the other way around. You are a very experienced gamer and use all the cheap tricks the game provides in order to win, and then you are very snooty about it. Furthermore, there surely had been incidents where those players start harassing other players because of their player skills, and this is no fun at all. Well, probably for the one harassing others, it is funny. But that's probably one of the reasons why home consoles became popular. The first home console ever was the Magnavox Odyssey, which got released in 1972, and from there the home console era began. But as you can imagine, it got boring soon, because you can't usually invite a whole audience, even if it's only 10 people, to your home. That would be a massive chaos, and if they aren't trustworthy, it is even more risky. Additional to that, if you were a teen by that time, parents certainly did not allow that. The solution is to only invite one or two friends to play, handing over the controller to the next player when you lost your game. That is inconvenient, because sometimes you had to wait for an hour depending on how much friends you invited and how long they survived. Fortunately, Atari released a console on which one of the most popular 1v1 arcade games could be played on, and I already mentioned it before. It was Pong, with Atari basically making the first move for the multiplayer home gaming world. Many other home consoles from different publishers with a variety of multiplayer games got released. Bearing this in mind, as more games and also consoles got released, the more fun became playing with friends, especially when solving a problem together. Of course, nowadays playing with friends is a bit different because of the online multiplayer. You don't have to invite friends over to play a video game. No, you simply turn on your desktop or console, go into an audio chat room like Discord and already talk with them. You could even talk with a person from the other side of the globe, if you wanted to. Afterwards, start the same game and play together, as long as it is possible. And let's be honest, in my opinion, playing alone is kind of boring. Therefore, when I play a solo game, I'm usually in an audio chat room where I can still talk with my friends, because it is simply funnier when talking or even playing with friends. Now, as you know the difference between competitive and cooperation games and why multiplayer became so popular, it is finally time to reveal the game I wanted to suggest you. Bum bum bum. It is called It Takes Two, and as the name suggests, it takes two players to play it. You can't even play it alone, so you really need two players. But don't worry, you don't need to buy it two times. The game has actually two versions, one free friend version and one full game version, which of course needs to be paid. That gives players the possibility to buy the full game version together, which makes it cheaper, and still play the game together. Now, before I start talking about the gameplay itself, let's first start with the narrative. It Takes Two has obviously three protagonists. No, just kidding, there are only two. On the one side we have Cody, who is the father of Rose and May's husband. On the other side we have May, Rose's mother, and Cody's wife. That sounds beautiful, right? A married couple. But there, of course, must be a clue. Cody and May are setting up for divorce. After Cody argues with May about her working all the time, and May arguing back that Cody never shows even a little appreciation for a job. As soon as they tell their daughter Rose that they are divorcing, Rose runs away and grabs her handmade dolls, which actually look a lot like her parents. And she's basically trying to fix their relationship by play acting. During the play acting, she takes out a book which has the name Book of Love, written by Dr. Hakim. Suddenly, she starts begging Dr. Hakim to fix Cody's and May's marriage. With a tear from Rose dropping onto the two dolls, Cody's and May's soul is being transferred into the doll's body. From there, the actual game starts. Dr. Hakim is the person, or in this case, a speaking book with a very cool accent, who guides the players through every new chapter and hands Cody and May over their individual power for this chapter of challenges. There are 9 major chapters in It Takes Two, each with its own thematic in order to fix Cody's and May's marriage. Each chapter has sub-chapters, but they aren't very distributed, because the major chapter Rosie's Room has the most sub-chapters with a number of 10. Then we have the major chapter Cuckoo Clock with the least subchapters, which are only 3. But the time distribution are nearly the same for every major chapter, because some subchapters are longer than others. As there are so many chapters and abilities, it would take hours to explain It Takes Two. Therefore, we'll mainly focus on the chapter Rose's Room, because this chapter has some unique features which the others do not have. Rosie's Room has, as mentioned, 10 sub-chapters, each being very individual. In this major chapter, Cody and May will have 3 different abilities, but only one at a time. In the first few sub-chapters, Cody will have the ability of cosmic inflation, allowing him to alter his size to very large or to very small. And May gets a pair of space boots, which allows her to defy the laws of gravity. At specific spots, she can use them to walk up walls and ceilings. With those two abilities, they have to work together and free the other player's way. For example, the first challenge is to open a big sliding door, which is blocking their way on the ground. But the door does not touch the ceiling. That means that the door only prevents players on the ground from moving on. The door needs to be opened by pushing it upwards, but there is no lever to do that, so Cody cannot help with his abilities. But in the room is a gravitational way, leading to the ceiling of the room, which May can walk up using her space boots. When she arrives at the top and moves in front of the door, she notices that there is a lever to pull the door upwards, which creates a slight gap between the door and the ground. Now Cody can transform into a smaller version and pass through the slight gap created. When Cody passed through, May can release the lever and simply walk through the free hole to the other side, and from there continue the level. In the second part of that major chapter, Cody and May get each a fidget spinner, which allows them to fly around in Rosie's room, which is somehow themed like a ball pit at the beach. There they need to stop a few ball falls, which are basically waterfalls, but instead of water, they have those balls falling down. To move or fly with the fidget spinner, they have to jump on surfaces, which slings them back into the air, and then glide with the fidget spinner to the next object, which slides them back into the air. The last part of that major chapter is something more like an action RPG. Cody and May are trapped inside a cell in a toy castle. They escape the cell by crouching through a hole behind the toilet. As it is a toy castle, there surely are no pipes or other stuff blocking their way. As they get out, a knight slightly saw them and suspiciously moves to their location. In the next screen, Cody is dressed up as a wizard and May as a knight. She even has a sword, and they are acting as if they were statues, because obviously they do not want to get caught. But then Cody transforms into an actual wizard with the power of ice. He can do ice blasts and do small range teleports. May, on the other hand, gets a knight costume with, a sword, which grants her the power over fire. She can unleash bursts of fire and do flaming dashes. Now, they have to fight their way through the castle. As you can see, It Takes Two comes with a variety in abilities to pass the challenges provided by the game. But there are also other challenges without abilities. There's one which even reminded me a bit of the movie Pirates of the Caribbean, because I had to guide a boat through pirate territory while my friend shoots down the pirates, and at the end we had to shoot down an octopus. Additional to those 9 major chapters, there are 25 competitive mini-games distributed in those chapters. These can be found by exploring the map of that specific chapter or sub-chapter. An example for the mini-game is Whack-a-Cody, which is the same as Whack-a-Mole, but only that Cody is the mole and May uses the hammer to punch him. Another example is Tug of War, and the one who loses falls in a hole. Well, of course the character gets respawned, but yeah, it is for the sake of fun, as long as pulling your partner into a hole is fun. Well, folks, we've been on a little journey today, from the arcade games where the first video games were developed, to the development of the first home consoles, which are the reason why the multiplayer games became popular. We know that the difference between competitive and cooperative games depends on whether you are playing with a friend or against them. Finally, we talked about a game that was released recently and which I think brings a lot of fun with it. Thank you for listening to my podcast, and I hope you enjoyed it.